I'm going to go spend some money because my bricks and my dirt's gone up in value.
Well, no, the bricks haven't gone up in value. The dirt has gone up in value. That's the thing. A house is a depreciating asset. It is decreasing in value over time. It is the land underneath that is going up.
Yep.
You are damaging the house by living in it. You're damaging the asset. Welcome to Checks and Balances, brought to you by Partners Life. I'm Michael Vincent. This is James Blair. And today, are you throwing your money away while renting?
So today, I reckon, is going to be a little bit controversial. You know why I think today's going to be a little bit controversial, Mike?
Because we're going to find out where you bought your first property.
Maybe. Remuneration Road, a.k.a. Remuera Road.
For a cool $7
million. Yeah. Today's going to be controversial because there's this idea around, you know, I'm paying off somebody else's mortgage while I'm renting. I'm throwing my money away while renting. But Mike, interest rates are now 7%.
Mm-hmm.
House prices have gone up, so mortgages are huge. There is a really interesting question, which we will give you the answer today. Should you buy a house or should you just rent and go do something else?
Yeah, should you keep feeding those greedy landlords? Yeah, look, I mean, there's a lot that plays into it, right? There's the money behind it. There's the psychology of owning a house. There's the status symbol that comes with owning your own home, which in New Zealand is a really big thing. So today we're going to dive into all of that and give you the answer with the stats to back it up.
And I've got the stats and I'm relatively confident in my stats, but I was like, Ravi, check the numbers, find gaps in the numbers. So I know all of the property fans are going to come at me after this and be like, this doesn't make sense.
Okay, so let's start at the start. Why do you think people say you're throwing your money away while renting, you're paying someone else's mortgage?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is owning a home is a sign of success.
Yeah.
So like your mates are jealous when you put that Instagram post up. I know you did this, my guy. You put the picture up, that sign, the for sold sign.
I only have one photo on Instagram and it is that photo.
Yeah. So your mates are jealous. Your parents brag to their friends. They're low-key proud of you for the first time in your life. It's a sign of like being grown up and being an adult. For some reason, who knows why? You've just got like some dirt and some bricks. And suddenly you feel good about yourself. So I don't know exactly why, but there is that I feel good about myself.
It's been in the Kiwi kind of psyche for years, right? Yep. You know, you get your quarter acre, have your family, do the thing, pay your mortgage off, and then move into a rest home and die. It's the Kiwi dream.
Yeah, what a dream to live. I think another reason is there is the view that landlords are wealthy and renters are worse off, which probably, to be fair, is a pretty accurate view.
Yep.
And I think that view exists because a lot of Kiwis, if you go and find 100 millionaires, a lot of those are going to make a decent chunk of their money through property.
Yeah, absolutely, right? And I think, you know, but with house prices being so high at the moment, you know, interest rates being 7%, deposit rates having increased substantially. Remember, you didn't always need a 20% deposit for a house. You know, a long time ago, you could walk up, flick a dollar at them and be like, all right, give me the rest of the money. Yeah. Let's get this thing done.
Yeah. Got a really interesting side story, Mike.
Yeah.
My nan in the 1960s, yep. I believe, won $16,000 in the lotto. She bought a house outright.
That's a hell of a win.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Is that where the Blair family fortune started?
Hey,
was the leg up in life?
Yeah, we went from there, from the mean streets of West Sydney and Parramatta to Remuera Road.
Via West Pennant Hills.
Yeah. But it is a really good point. And I mean, Mike, you are the guy getting people into houses, shilling them loads of debt.
Heaps.
You roll up to their house, drop the...
just open the boot and just out you
here's, get. Yeah. Here's the cash. It does beg the question, with the size of the mortgages, the repayments at 7%, which we're going to talk about, versus what people are paying in rent before they buy a home, are you actually better off owning a home or should you rent long term? So today we're going to break down those numbers.
So there are some additional costs just on top of the mortgage and the rates.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, you buy that sweet 1970s bungalow, it's going to have some maintenance problems, right?
Not at all. Draft. No. Yeah, it's indoor outdoor flow.
I was just going to say that. Okay. So the best way to learn is to go through an example.
Cool.
So today I've used the example of one of my properties with my first home, now rental property, which is a two-bedroom, two-bathroom home, a little bit of a backyard. It's like a old 1970s townhouse.
Great deck.
Yeah, in Remuera. Mike says great deck, and then I laugh and look at him because was it 2 days before you moved to the UK?
1 day before I moved to the UK.
Yeah.
We ripped your deck apart and tried to rebuild it in like 24 yeah. hours.
And all the packing we put in underneath.
Yeah.
And then there was...
We've covered this off before.
We yeah. Well, there's new listeners. I think it's important to go back and do it again. And we were looking at the which box of nails we should buy, whether we should buy the red box or the blue box. We did not buy the galvanized nails. So
I maintain to this day that I bought the correct box of nails and that the nails weren't galvanized.
Yeah, and some people aren't good taking accountability in their life. And based off that statement, I know what camp you sit in. So anyway, the deck completely rusted through within about 2 weeks.
James didn't have the heart to tell me. He didn't tell me for like 3 years. Yeah. And then he made some comment in a group chat where it was, and I was like, what are you talking about? It was like 3 or 4 years later yeah. and he finally came clean. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah. And then my poor dad, like, he got, like, knee pads, pulled up all of the nails one by one.
This is after you got around and punched them all in. Yeah. Because I didn't have time to punch them.
Yeah. Flicked the timber around and knocked them all out and then redid it. But because the Blairs have no building skills whatsoever, he did a shit job. And then we had to redo the whole thing again. All right. So let's go into the numbers because it's one of the best ways to learn to understand if owning versus renting is a good idea. So we're going to use my property that was my first home, now a rental property. It's a 2-bedroom, 2-bathroom place in Remuera. Now, I'm around about $5 million houses.
Yep.
I bought this place for about $770,000, like 2014-ish. It's now, at the peak of the market, it's worth about 1.5, now worth about 1.27.
Cool, 1.5.
Yeah, just lost a couple $100,000 over the past 18 months. No big deal. Now, when it comes to this scenario, we're going to talk about if you rent it versus if you were to buy it today. So if you rented it, you'd be paying $710 a week or $37,000 a year. If you bought it, it would cost you $1.27 million. So Mike's going to load you to the gills with debt.
Absolutely.
Now, let's assume you pay a 10% deposit, which means you're going to have a mortgage of $1,143,000 at a 7.29% interest rate, which means you're going to make weekly mortgage repayments of $1,800, which is $93,600 a year. So already paying a lot more, Mike.
Mm.
We're not done yet, though. There are additional costs with this property that we can't forget about. So there's a body corporate, which also covers the insurance, the driveway, a little bit of like...
shared spaces.
Yeah, yep. That kind of stuff. That's about $3,600 a year. The rates are about $4,000, and there's about $3,000 in maintenance, which... some years would definitely be light. Total cost in addition to the mortgage repayments, $10,600, which means your total outgoings for this property are $104,200. So from a cash flow perspective, Mike, we are $67,200 better off renting, or if we were to put it in another perspective, 280% better.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting stat because a lot of people just think, get the house, get the mortgage, that's it. Like, you know, we get it and keep going. But if you consider really, what does that outlay mean for our household? That is a lot of money to be spending on a mortgage and on a property. And yep, I know we can do cheaper properties. I know we can do this, but the math really is the same. Like you still have to be able to afford the repayments and afford the costs and then afford to live your life as well.
Yep.
Because nothing worse when someone buys a house, takes out a huge mortgage, then sits in that house and can't leave it because they can't afford to do anything.
Yeah. So the $67,000 better off renting is from a cash flow perspective. So I know all those property nuts out there are going to be, James, tell me about the wealth. Surely property is better from a wealth perspective. Well, before I do that, I think there's two important caveats, which to the property fans, very important to touch on. The first one is, Mike, obviously we've got principal repayments within those mortgage repayments.
Yeah.
Now, you start off slowly. We're just servicing a bucket load of interest costs. So in the first year, $83,000 of that is just paying the interest costs, but $10,300 of that is principal, which is helping you go forward.
Yeah. And then the next one is you are getting those capital gains. So if house prices increase 5% per annum, so just your average kind of rate that increases across the country, on a $1.27 million house, on average, you're generating about $63,500 of capital gains per year.
Which is really good.
That is very good. Now, that starts to tip the numbers a little bit back in your favor.
Yeah. So let's flip it. So one point for renting from a cash flow perspective, but let's flip it to talking about wealth. So when you rent, you have $37,000 of outgoings,
mm-hmm.
but let's assume you've still got that deposit, that $127,000. Let's assume you put that in a managed fund and after tax make a 5% return. That's $6,350 in capital gains or income or whatever.
Yep.
Now, that's 10 times less than the capital gains on the property. But the rent less the managed funds making a return, you're out of pocket $30,650 a year.
Yeah.
Now, surely those capital gains are going to offset it for us, Mike. If we're owning a home, so we've got the mortgage repayments of $104,200, the principal repayments, which are productive, so they're $10,300, the capital gains of $63,500, we're still out of pocket $30,400. So despite those sick capital gains, we are still $250 better off renting than buying the home from a wealth perspective. And that's before you even start talking about what do we go and do with all of the spare cash flow, assuming you've got that spare money.
So when you are starting off with a mortgage, it can be pretty daunting, right? Because you're tipping in all of this cash and you're only paying off a little bit of that principal. But over time, you are going to see the principal start to increase and you're servicing less of the interest cost on the mortgage. So that is something that, you know, at the start, pretty tough. As it goes on, it gets a bit better. But I guess the big thing there is when you own the asset, you are getting capital gains on a much larger scale, right? And I think that's the thing why Kiwis love property so much is you can see right there, if you're just investing, you might get $6,350 back. If you've got that larger asset, you've got a much larger capital gain over that first 12 months.
Yeah. And I know I'm talking to all those property people out there. I know there's more things going to be telling me about kids having like peace of mind with stability. At some point, you'll have no mortgage repayments because you pay off the mortgage. Hang around. We're going to talk about all of those things. Now, the question becomes, Mike, so the person renting, in theory, has $67,000 that they can go and do something with.
Yep.
So if they go and do something with that money, are they better off? So we've got three scenarios that we're going to go through. One is you rent and contribute to managed funds.
Mm-hmm.
The second is you rent and buy an investment property and also still contribute to managed funds. The third is you buy the house, which we'll go through.
Outright. Cool.
So scenario one, assume before mortgage repayments or rent, you have $104,000 spare a year, because that's what the person who's owning the home is contributing. Now, rent is $37,000. We've been through that base of that property. It means we've got $67,000 spare to invest. Now, we're going to assume as well that while the rent will increase over time, we're going to assume that your salary is going to increase over time. That's going to offset it. We're not doing any additional contributions to managed funds over the years, which, to be fair, you know, probably would happen depending on the person.
Yeah.
Let's say you invest into a diversified high growth portfolio with 95% in shares and property and maybe 5% in cash, a return of 8% less 3% for tax, which is a little bit on the high side, a net return of 5%. So if you contributed $67,000 each year after 10 years with the compounding returns, you'd have $993,000, which, Mike, for a renter, ain't too bad.
It's not a bad scratch. And I guess in terms of your returns on that portfolio, would you consider that 8% return fairly average? Could you go higher risk?
Yeah. I mean, the S&P 500 of the last 50 years done about 10% per annum. So there's maybe a little bit more upside in it.
Yeah.
Before we move on, we talk all the time about planning and growing our wealth, but protecting that wealth is just as important. That's why having the right insurance in place can help when life goes unexpectedly.
And that's why this episode is brought to you by Partners Life, a New Zealand-operated award-winning insurance provider with over 300,000 Kiwis insured and 89% of claims paid.
Partners Life understand that having some insurance is better than having no insurance. They have flexible and personalized solutions for any budget or situation.
Check out their website in our show notes below.
Scenario two. So we buy an investment property and keep renting. The reason I like this scenario to go through is there are, especially if you come to me at about 40, I go, all right, you want to buy your first home. I get it. That's cute. White picket fence. All that stuff is great. The problem is you need enough time to pay off the mortgage and then contribute enough money towards retirement, which we may or may not call the sprint. So buying an investment property, you're still getting exposure to property without being forced to knock through this mortgage and then run away off the back of it. So the first thing we're going to do in this scenario, so we're continuing renting, we've still got the same amount of spare cash flow. We're going to buy a different type of property. The reason for that, Mike, is the rental yield on the Remuera property sucks.
Trash.
And I think about it every day.
Yeah, look, and At the moment, we're in the middle of a whole lot of changes around tax laws and everything. So you've got interest deductibility coming back in for in situ investment properties. You've got Brightline potentially being changed. Now, when we're talking about these pure play investment properties, for the longest time now, for a little while at least, we've just been talking about these kind of new build townhouses, right? Because they have that really good tax treatment on them, a bit of Brightline and the interest deductibility. So when we're looking at these properties, are you now thinking I'm going to shift from the Remuera property to a more that style of townhouse property, a cheaper, higher yield?
Yeah, that's right. So instead of when you're buying a home to live in, it's from an emotional perspective. Yeah. What are the school zones? What are the local takeouts like?
Is how long will the commute? Woolen carpet.
Yeah. How long will the commute to work be? What are, you know? Do the neighbors smell? All of that kind of stuff. Investment is just looking at the numbers.
Yeah.
So we're going to assume that you buy a $750,000 townhouse, like Mike assumed. It's going to require $150,000 deposit, which is a little bit higher, but let's just, you know, stay with me, assume that we can find that extra money. To make calculations easy, you're going to get about $750 a week in rent, which is more than the Remuera property and a far lower mortgage that you would have. So let's assume you've got to top up those property, the investment property, by $2,200 a year. And that takes into account accounting, rates, insurance, all of that kind of stuff. Yep. The investor will still have left over $40,000 a year because, remember, we're saving all of the money that would have gone towards the mortgage repayments if we owned a home, which means we can also contribute $40,000 a year towards managed funds. Now, I looked at a scenario where you just don't do managed funds at all and you buy more property. The problem with that is you've got to save bigger deposits and it takes some time to do it. But after 10 years, if you contribute $40,000 to managed funds with zero initial deposit, just regular contributions, you'd have $536,000 in your managed fund. And the investment property, if it was interest only on the mortgage the whole time, the capital gain at 5% would be $471,000 after 10 years. So your total wealth with managed funds and the investment property is $1,007,000.
Yeah. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
You got to admit. And also you get, when you're renting, you get the flexibility of, if I have kids, I can move into a good school area. I'm not tied down, which, to be honest, we do get a lot of people selling their first property and trying to buy in a good school area. Like you see it on like double grammar zone, you know, that sort of thing. So there are some advantages outside of just the monetary stuff there.
Yeah, definitely. So scenario three is what we spoke about, what your parents will be proud of you for doing, buying that house for $1.27 million. If you buy that house over 10 years, increases 5% a year, it'll jump to about $2.07 million,
yeah,
which is $800,000 in capital gains. Now, I've used the sweet Lighthouse mortgage repayment calculator to understand what our mortgage will be over 10 years, because once again, we're making those principal repayments. We will have paid off $156,000 of principal. This is also assuming you haven't borrowed any money to go back on holidays, do renovations on your home, you know, spend your life savings at Bunnings on sausage sizzles. The total wealth equity on your home after 10 years is $954,000.
To be fair to the Bunnings Brigade, though, is if you are at Bunnings spending on the house, you're effectively spending on the house. So you will be getting a little bit of a bump in the capital gains there.
Depending if you...
Unless you're just plugging the gaps in the floor because you bought a bungalow in Greyland.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've definitely spoken to people who spent a lot of money on renos and really wish we could go back in time and spend that money differently. So we've got the three scenarios that we've gone through. So let's go through the results. Mm. So the first one, renting and just investing in managed funds, $993,000 in wealth after 10 years. Managed funds and investment property while renting, $1,007,000 after 10 years. Owning your own home and your parents being proud of you, $954,000 after 10 years. So Mike, out of those three scenarios with this particular property, based off the way the world is at the moment, the worst scenario is owning your own home.
Yeah, which is really interesting because if you think about it, like James said, what are your parents going to be proud of you? You've got the house, you've got the white picket fence. However, the math doesn't really stack up. So look, obviously this is only over 10 years. You can extrapolate this out over a longer period of time. However, I would bet that you would still get the same order.
Yeah, so the winner in this scenario is managed funds and investment property. There's probably a few things I want to talk about. There's a whole bunch of caveats with this. The results are pretty similar, between the three. Like, we're within 10%.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is going to depend on the house you buy, interest rates at the time, your return assumption, your income. The interesting outcome, though, is, and the reason I want to do this episode, is the whole idea of I am just paying off somebody's mortgage is just a load of bollocks. Like, it's all about what is the right thing for your situation. Who cares about, you know, what, you know, is perceived to be success or not? It's about having your plan based off your goals and making decisions as we go.
So long as you are doing something with the money, that is the key. If you are just renting, paying off someone else's mortgage and not investing and not saving and not buying an investment property, you are then missing out and you are just on the treadmill of life.
Yeah, it is a really good point that
the discipline has to be there. And I think important point about mortgages, it is a forced savings account. It forces you to be disciplined with your money.
Yeah, and if we think about it, most people aren't saving. So this is some form of saving, right?
Yeah.
So I definitely agree that's a really big tick if you're not good with your money, if you're passive, but you listen to checks and balances. You want to understand your options for the future. So I'm sure that is not you. But and on the other side, renting does give you, which Mike alluded to more, choices around renting, more flexibility to live somewhere nicer. If something happens in your life, you can stop managed funds contributions for a period of time while the bank always wants to be paid their mortgage payments.
Very hard to stop those mortgage payments.
Yeah. So a few more talking points before we wrap it up. So one is interest rates are high. So obviously with these assumptions, maybe interest rates long-term, would you reckon somewhere around 5%?
Yeah, mid fives, low fives.
Yeah. Now, a lot of you would go, well, this is going to change the numbers. But I can guarantee you when interest rates come down, 80% of you are going to reduce your mortgage repayments back to the minimum. So opposed to going, well, I'm just going to make additional principal repayments when interest rates come down, lots and lots of Kiwis will go, I deserve a holiday. I deserve something nice.
So my Rolex is broken. Give me another one.
Yeah. That refurb's costing me $4,000. So that's one really important element to it as well. The other piece is, like I said, this is based off one property. If the house was cheaper or more expensive or the rent was higher or lower, it would obviously skew the results dramatically. Next point, in two scenarios where you rent, you do have more flexibility, which I just mentioned before. So if you do have an emergency, you can stop. Let's talk about the feelings, Mike. So obviously, a lot of people buy a home because they want security. They don't want the tenant to dictate, you know, what they're doing with their lives and you know, being forced to move.
Yeah, but I guess one of those things is the security you have with your house is really only ever dependent on you having a job, right? The moment you don't have a job, you really have no security in your house. Because if you stop repaying the mortgage, you'd probably be kicked out faster than if you stop paying your rent.
Yeah.
Like it's quite a lot more difficult to get renters out of a house than it is for the bank to go through PLA and sell your house. So yes, there is a sense of security there. However, I guess it's kind of, it's almost made up.
Yep.
Yeah.
The other piece is if property prices increase by more than 5% per annum, that would skew the numbers. But to your point earlier on, the share market performs better, that will also skew the numbers.
Well, if interest rates increase, if as a renter, you aren't exposed to that so much because there are caps on how much your rent can go up per year and the frequency that it can go up. So while the person having the mortgage might be exposed to that straight away on a short-term fixed interest rate, the renter won't be exposed to that so much. And Kiwi landlords are notorious for not passing costs through to their tenants.
But they're greedy landlords.
They are greedy, but they're slow to pass costs through, right? So as a tenant, you aren't exposed to the same cost fluctuations that a homeowner would be, right? When mortgage rates increase or decrease, a mortgage holder or a landlord is going to be exposed to that fairly quickly because most Kiwis are fixed on short-term interest rates. Whereas there are caps and restrictions around how often that you can, and by how much you can raise rents, right? So there is a bit of an advantage there to a tenant as they're shielded from costs that aren't passed through straight away. And if you do want to learn a little bit more about that, check out our episode on why rents don't increase so quickly.
Cool. Next point is, obviously, you're making principal repayments on the mortgage. At some point in the future, in theory, you won't have a mortgage. Now, there is a growing concern that lots of Kiwis are going to have a mortgage going into retirement. But if you pay off the mortgage, your cash flow will be better because obviously you don't have this huge cost.
Mm-hmm.
The equity in your home in isolation doesn't really mean anything is the next point I want to talk about. So say in this scenario, right, the value of the house goes up. Unless you sell the house, it doesn't matter.
Oh, people, it feels good though. Yeah. God, it feels good to see that go up on paper.
I'm going to go spend some money because my bricks and my dirt's gone up in value.
Well, no, the bricks haven't gone up in value. The dirt has gone up in value. That's the thing. A house is a depreciating asset. It is decreasing in value over time. It is the land underneath that is going up.
Yep.
You are damaging the house by living in it. You're damaging the asset.
Yeah. So if the value of your house is going up and you're living in it, it doesn't mean anything. While if you have an investment property, you could sell it in the future. You could deplete the funds. You've got some income coming through in the form of rent. You've got managed funds that you can eat into. So the value of the home doesn't really mean anything. Obviously, there's a whole other thing around leverage and the equity. You can go and buy something else and that becomes an investment. So that is another thing to take into consideration.
Yep.
The final point, and all the engineers out there, all the people that suffer from paralysis by analysis, you can look at these scenarios and pick the numbers and go, this scenario is slightly better, or what about this assumption over this assumption? The main point I want you to take away, outside of you don't just have to buy a home to live and to be successful in life, is all of these people are better off because they took action. So all of these people have another $1 million over 10 years that you don't have. And if you just do analyzing of numbers, running spreadsheets, and take no action, you ain't going anywhere. So all of these people are better off. Make sure whichever scenario you decide is right for you, that you just get on with the show.
Yep, wow. And let's get on with giving us a review, giving us a subscribe, and rating the podcast. Thank you to Partners Life. We'll see you next time.